We're on the telephone with Mike Owen, Extension Weed Scientist at Iowa State University. Mike wanted to visit with you about the situation with herbicide resistance in weeds in the state of Iowa and find out kind of where we're at here in 2013. I know this is an issue that's kind of been percolating for several years here, and give me an update on where you think things are at right now.
Well, unfortunately, we are making slow changes. I'm afraid it may be to some degree too little too late for some producers. Actually, we've been dealing with herbicide-resistant weeds in the Midwest for more than 50 years. The difference is that when we ran into a barrier in the past, the industry was able to come forward with new technologies that resolved those problems. The latest before the glyphosate issue was with all of the ALS inhibitor herbicides, and we had widespread resistance to these group 2 herbicides across the Midwest, particularly in giant ragweed and common water hemp. Growers generally weren't overly concerned because they knew that in the mid-90s the glyphosate-resistant trait would become commercial and glyphosate could then be used, and at that time many thought that glyphosate was not vulnerable to any onslaught by weeds, and unfortunately we found that to be not the case. Here lately I see that across the Midwest, glyphosate-resistant weeds continue to evolve, not new species necessarily, but more populations in fields of the same species. And the three that we are most concerned about here in the Midwest are common water hemp, giant ragweed, and then mare's tail or horseweed. Down south, and I know you cover quite a broad geographical range, even in Nebraska, Kansas, and Missouri, Palmer amaranth is also an issue, and certainly glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth is a real problem, and in fact is the weed that brought attention, I think, globally to this issue. It's been kind of a dirty little secret for a long time, but the problems that growers had in the Mid-South and in the Delta with Palmer amaranth resistance to glyphosate kind of brought everything to a head and has created quite, I think, a positive perspective. At least people are beginning to worry about it and move forward trying to manage it. But my assessment is that the number of fields that have herbicide resistance, or more specifically glyphosate resistance, are increasing, and dare I say they are increasing at an increasing rate. What's problematic about this is the fact that already most of these fields have water hemp, for example, that has previously evolved resistance to other herbicide classes. In Iowa, we found populations of common water hemp that are resistant to 5 different herbicide groups, the group 2s, which are the ALS inhibitors like Pursuit, the group 5s, which are the triazine herbicides such as atrazine, glyphosate, of course, the group 14s, which are the PPO inhibitor herbicides. A good example here, I think, would be Cobra or Flexstar, something like that. And then finally, and this is kind of the last one that has showed up, the group 27 herbicides. These are the HPPD inhibitor herbicides. Examples would be Callisto, Impact, and then there are some others that Bayer Crop Science markets. We have populations that are resistant to all 5 of those products. So when you think as a grower, what am I going to do, that becomes a real issue. And what I've seen, the growers have generally gotten a pretty good handle on some of the best management practices. For example, rotating modes of action or using multiple modes of action in a tank mix or something like that. The problem is that we need to insert one word in that, and that word is effective. And so when we rotate herbicides, we have to rotate effective herbicides. And when we include multiple herbicide modes of action in a tank mix, we need to include multiple effective modes of herbicide action. And my point is that when you have a driver weed population such as common water hemp, which is the driver weed in most of the Midwest, if it's previously resistant to a number of different herbicides, you have to be pretty careful to choose cleverly the effective products that you have available. Simply just adding another mode of action may not help.
You covered a wide range there, and my next question was, and you touched on it some, is, you know, are farmers moving fast enough to address the issue here?
Well, I think I can kind of be curt in that manner, and that is no.
What would you like to see them do?
Well, I think basically they need to look at a couple of things, and some are pretty fundamental. One of them is that they need to look beyond just adding new herbicides. It's clear that weeds have been very, very efficient and very effective at evolving resistances to herbicides. As it turns out, there are no commercially available herbicides globally that have not had weeds evolve resistance. Okay. It may not be in your field, but basically the message is weeds are going to evolve resistance to herbicides if that selection pressure from that herbicide is intense enough. So we need to move beyond herbicides. Herbicides are certainly important, but we can't just focus on herbicides only. We need to look at other strategies, and this is where, you know, it gets a little bit dicey. I'll throw out this C word, cultivation. And growers, you know, they roll their eyes, and, you know, I don't have time to do that, and so forth and so on. But that gets to the third point, and that is we need to be more site-specific about our management. And so when I tell a grower, maybe you need to cultivate, and he or she says to me, well, I've got too many acres, I don't have time, and so forth and so on. I says, no. You don't have to cultivate all of your acres. You need to cultivate the acres that have the problem and require cultivation. Or if one says, okay, maybe I should consider a cover crop, you don't put cover crops on all of the acres, you put the cover crops on the acres that need the help. Or maybe it's rotational tillage or changing up your crop rotation scheme or something like that. Each field is different. Each weed population is likely different. Now, growers have avoided doing that kind of management with regard to weeds. And that's because the solution that the Roundup Ready technology and glyphosate provided was simple and convenient. And those are powerful sirens that growers have listened to, and they are hesitant or reluctant or even will not change from that. But they need to. And what's kind of ironic is that they are already doing that exact same site-specific management that I'm recommending for weeds, but they are doing it for the selection of their crops. Ask a grower if they plant only one corn hybrid on all of the fields, and they'll look at you and say, what are you, stupid? And you ask them why, and they say, well, I'm managing risk. I'm spreading things out. Yeah, good plan. And then you ask them, what about fertilizer? Do you fertilize all of your fields the same way? And they, of course, say no, because soils are different, crop rotations are different, and so forth. And so they need to take that same exact types of management specificity and apply it to weed management, because fields are different, weed populations are different, the number of weeds, the types of weeds that are in there, and probably the resistances that are also in those weeds are different, and they need to manage it just as accurately as they do when they select their crop cultivars and hybrids.
What are the consequences here? I mean, we've seen the pictures of the fields down south with the wagons piled high with weeds that have had to been pulled by hand. And as far as how this could impact crop production and profitability, what are we looking at?
Well, I am not prescient about those sorts of things, but my sense is that in the Midwest, primarily because of our traditional crop production systems, we are not going to get ourselves to the point where the growers in the Delta and the Mid-South got themselves into. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't get there, but we still include a modicum of tillage on many of those acres. And that tillage, the conservation tillage that we employ, is just enough of a diversity mechanism to kind of smooth things over a little bit. It serves to dampen these changes in the weed populations. They're still changing, but they're not changing as rapidly as what we found where no tillage is used, no crop rotation is used, no herbicide rotation is used, which is what the growers in the South were doing. And there, yeah, you're going to select for the biggest dog in the field, and for them, that was the Palmer Amaranth. We have fields like that here in Iowa. And we have fields like that in the Midwest. But as a general statement, it's just going to be a little bit smoother ride for us. But we're going to get to a point where even today, with the weed populations that we have and the resistant individuals that exist, we're still losing money. And obviously, that's not a good thing.
Well, we have, and I've noticed, I guess, more news releases coming from companies talking about this situation. Of course, I know you and Extension have been working on this for quite some time. Iowa Soybean Association stepping up here. So it seems like awareness of the issue is really starting to peak here.
Oh, the awareness is excellent. The problem is that it's like, you know, with my children, they are aware of what I want them to do. But getting them to do what they need to do is another issue entirely. You know, unfortunately, you know, humans have this concept of a memory of convenience, and this is a good year to just show what that means. You know, I think a lot of growers had really good intentions about doing the right thing, using the pre's, making the early pre-plant applications, and so forth and so on. And now here we are at the, you know, two-thirds of May gone, and we're still pretty behind as far as getting crops in the ground. And all those good intentions have kind of gone out the window. And those are the attention to details that need to be followed. And, you know, one of the things that I have been trying to promote across the state this year is that just because we're late, you don't want to take shortcuts that are going to end up costing you in the pocketbook later on. You know, creating mistakes early in the season that you've got to live with all season long, you know, that's a lot of salt to be rubbing in a wound. And so I think even though, you know, yeah, time is short, we still need to make sure that we're doing things correctly, even if it may take just a little bit more time.